I am pleased tonight to welcome Mark Hetfield to our congregation. Mark and I met in the lobby this evening, but when you're introducing someone you've never met, you read their bio very carefully. And I realized that Mark would feel very much at home here at Temple B'nai Shalom because he's a Hoya! BSFS Georgetown and JD. I married a BSFS from Georgetown, and I gave birth to a JD from Georgetown, so you belong here. We are delighted to welcome you to our congregation tonight. For those who did not read Mark's bio in the weekly email, let me just give you just a glimpse of the man who will be speaking to us this evening. Working for Immigration and Naturalization Service, Mark was posted in 1994 to Haiti at a very difficult time. He was a senior advisor on refugee issues at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, where he directed a congressionally authorized study on the treatment of asylum seekers. He is an award winner in the field of refugee protection and the advancement of human rights. As a highest caseworker in Rome, he assisted Jews from the former Soviet Union and helped them. And he's had an illustrious 25-year career with HIAS prior to becoming its president and CEO. I have known about HIAS my whole life because it was one of the organizations that my bubby had a pushka for in her apartment in Brooklyn. HIAS is the world's oldest and only Jewish global refugee agency, and I've been supporting HIAS my entire life in my bubby's honor. Mark is the preeminent voice of American Jewish communities, outspoken love and support of refugee and immigration issues. To be a voice for those who have no voice is such an important thing in Judaism, and Mark is that voice. An expert in refugee and immigration law, policy, and programs, Mark has led HIAS in its major transformation in recent times, not just an organization that has a history of helping Jewish refugees around the globe, but today a global agency assisting refugees of all faiths and identities. Tonight, he speaks to us on welcoming the stranger, seeing the global refugee crisis through a Jewish lens. It is my pleasure to welcome Ahoya to our Bima.
Shabbat Shalom. It is great to be here. I didn't know there were so many Hoyas among us, so that's important. How many people before had heard of HIAS? Okay, that's pretty good. And is there anybody here who was directly helped by HIAS? Yes, where from? Oh, Hungary? 1956 or 57? Did you go to New Jersey, Camp Kilmer? No? Okay. Okay, great. Anybody else? Yeah, where from?
Latvia.
Oh, Latvia? What year did you come? 1990 through Rome? Oh, great. Yeah, I was there. I was in Rome 1989 and 1990. Anybody else? All right. I'll say a little bit about HIAS first, and I'll talk right now about HIAS and our history, and then tonight, after the Oneg, for those of you who are night owls, we can talk about, I can answer any questions you have about refugees today and refugee issues today. Because right now we are facing the biggest refugee crisis than we have at any time in history. There are more displaced persons today than there ever have been. We surpassed the displacement numbers from World War II about 3 years ago. But HIAS was started in 1881, and we were named the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which isn't really descriptive of what we do now or even what we did then in terms of the meaning of the words. Back then, there was no such thing in U.S. law as a refugee. Anybody who came to this country was simply an immigrant. And an immigrant, as you know, is somebody who just moves from one country to another. A refugee is someone who flees from one country to another. They're fleeing persecution, fleeing anti-Semitism, fleeing persecution because of what they believe or what they look like or what their nationality is, what social group they're in. And we were really founded as a refugee agency because in 1881, there were pogroms, basically ethnic cleansing, or you could even say, even though the word did not exist then, a genocide against Jews that was going on in the Russian Empire. There was a campaign some characterize it as kill a third of the Jews, convert a third of the Jews, and get a third of the Jews to leave. And in fact, many Jews did leave. From 1881 to 1921, the American Jewish community grew from about 250,000 to over 3 million people. And Hyas was there in Castle Garden first, which was the predecessor to Ellis Island in New York, and then on Ellis Island to make sure that the Jewish refugees coming in got past the immigration authorities, were not turned back for being a possible public charge or for health reasons. We made sure they were fed kosher meals while they were waiting to get in. We gave them a shelter once they got off of Castle Garden or off of Ellis Island. And in fact, for those of you who know New York, our shelter for many, many decades was the Joseph Papp Public Theater. And there's now a plaque there, but that was our shelter and headquarters for a long time. And we'd give them onward transportation to other cities from New York. One thing we really tried to do, because New York was so crowded and expensive, was get as many Jews as possible out of New York and get them to other places. So we assisted with that. But the bottom line is that the very existence of the American Jewish community is owed to those times when America had opened its doors to refugees. Now, it wasn't an easy time. There was plenty of anti-Semitism back then, plenty of xenophobia, plenty of prejudice against these Jewish refugees. In fact, there was, for example, in 1908, the city of New York police commissioner released a report on crime in New York City. And in the report, it actually said that 50% of all crimes in New York were committed by Jews. In fact, it was the real number was 16%, but that didn't make it into the news. The story was half of all crimes are committed by Jews, who constituted 25% of the population at that time. The community had to react by starting a morals commission to try to seem like it was proactive in terms of getting ourselves to act better. But this is the type of prejudice we were often faced with. Jews were conceived of as being Bolsheviks and anarchists and socialists and unassimilable religious fanatics. And this created a lot of issues. And ultimately, in 1921, this open door policy that America had for immigrants was all immigrants except Asians, I should say, was closed with the Emergency Quota Act of 1921. This is something that made Hyas's job really tough because there were discriminatory quotas that were instated that shut our doors to most refugees and immigrants, required visas for the first time before you could get on a boat to come to the United States. Nationality quotas were instated that were deliberately and openly discriminatory, meant to limit the amount of immigration from Eastern Europe and Southern Europe, really directed against Jewish and Italian immigration. This was an emergency quota act, and you can understand the environment that caused it to be enacted by Congress, because this was after the U.S. had finally left World War I. We were sick and tired of having to deal with Europe's problems, and refugees and immigrants were identified as with those problems, and we didn't want to be bringing those problems from over there to over here. So this was meant to be a temporary measure to prevent that from happening. And the Emergency Quota Act of 1921 was only supposed to last 1 year, but in fact, it lasted 44 years. It lasted through the rise of power of the Nazis, through the enactment of the Nuremberg Laws, through Kristallnacht and through the Second World War and the Holocaust. And so as a result, many other countries followed our lead, and Hias couldn't get Jewish refugees to safety, really, in the U.S., in Australia, in Canada, in any of traditional countries of immigration. So we had to start operations in places like Shanghai and South America, places to bring Jews to try to live safely. But there were not nearly enough places. It was almost impossible to flee because there was no right to flee back then. There was no international law or international treaty that prevented a country from sending refugees back to places where they would be killed. And this is why people like Anne Frank and her family were forced to hide. They just simply had no way out. Although Hias did try to represent Anne Frank, we still have her file, her family's file. Otto Frank tried very hard for many, many years to reunite with his wife's brothers who lived in Boston, who managed to flee just after Kristallnacht. But of course, he was not successful, and we know how that story ended. But in 1948, things really changed for the better for us, for Hias, for our mission. Two things happened. One was the establishment of the State of Israel. So finally, Jews had a place to go to. For the previous 67 years, we didn't have such a place. And the second was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, where finally the right to flee, was the right to seek and enjoy asylum, was recognized. And this led later to the 1951 Convention for Refugees. Now, Hias was still largely focused on Jews for the next 60 years, Jewish refugees, because unfortunately there continued to be plenty of those. We focused on resettlement to the United States, to Israel. We were operational in countries where the Jewish Agency for Israel could not act, such as Tunisia and Morocco. And we were in the displaced persons camps in Europe throughout the 1950s. We were in helping Jews get out of Hungary in 1956, Jews get out of Cuba after 1959. And then in around 1970, we assisted, once again, as we did at the beginning of our history, hundreds of thousands of Jews, Russian-speaking Jews, leave the former Soviet Union to come to a life where they could find religious freedom in the United States. But then things started to change. There were no longer Jews trapped behind an iron curtain. There were very few Jews who could not get out, and of course those Jews who did were able to go to Israel. So we were able to pivot to help other faiths and ethnicities. We were able to go from being an organization that helped refugees because they were Jewish to an organization that helped refugees because we are Jewish. We opened up operations in Ecuador, Ukraine, Chad, Venezuela, Panama, Greece, and Costa Rica. And we continue to resettle refugees throughout the United States in partnership with Jewish family service agencies around the country. By 2006, a majority of the refugees we were resettling were not Jewish. I'd like to say that we've gone from our Exodus period to our Leviticus period. We've gone from a period when it was we who were fleeing to a period where we take what we learned from that and we apply it to helping others. It's not a coincidence that the commandment to love the stranger or welcome the stranger is repeated more often than any other commandment in the Torah. More than 36 times it's repeated. This isn't because it's the most important commandment. It's because refugees don't poll well. Refugees are not popular. They never have been, and they probably never will be, because they are the other. They're something that many people fear. And so apparently the God decided it was worth a lot of repetition to try to drill into us that we have to love the stranger as ourselves. I think he only talks about not boiling a calf in its mother's milk only once, but 36 times for welcoming the stranger and being kind to the stranger. And Hias, we were doing all this work on behalf of the American Jewish community, helping refugees all around the world, and very few people had heard of us, frankly, including the people we were representing, the American Jewish community. And we are part of the organized American Jewish community, if there is such a thing. But that changed in 2015, in September of 2015, with the photograph of Alon Kurdi, the little Syrian refugee boy whose lifeless body washed up on the beach in Turkey as his family was trying to flee. They had already fled from Syria, and they were now trying to flee from Turkey to Europe. That woke everybody up. It woke up our community. It woke up many communities of faith. It frankly woke up the Obama administration, which had not really been paying attention to the refugee crisis for the previous 6 years. And so it finally really engaged our community in protecting refugees to an extent that it really had not been since the crisis in the Soviet Jewry crisis. And that's something we really hope to sustain. I guess close to just tell one story about a refugee who's a good personal friend of mine and kind of an inspiration as to why we do the work that we do. This is Manny Lindenbaum. I go biking with this guy all the time. Every year we go on a bicycle trip. We just went to San Antonio in Austin, Texas. But Manny is now 85 years old. He was born in Unna, Germany, one of three children. And he had a normal childhood for a few years, but then his brother, Siegfried, his older brother, started getting beaten up in school on a regular basis. His parents, his mother in particular, would complain to the principal, who said there's nothing he could do about it. And then his father's business, it was a store in Unna, was boycotted, of course, because it was owned by Jews. And then eventually the family was rounded up along with all the other Jews in town and put on a train and deported on Shabbat from Germany to Poland. I mean, they were all born in Germany, but at that time, if you were of Polish descent, you were deported, if you were Jewish, into Poland. And they then, they lived on the border for a long time with many other refugees from Germany, but then when it became clear that an invasion of Germany was about to happen, invasion by Germany into Poland, they fled north. And it was, of course, total mayhem. But there was a man who was gathering children and saying, you know, I can bring these kids to England on a kinder transport. And so Manny's mother pushed the three kids, Manny and his brother Siegfried and his sister Anna, into the hands of this guy. And she then just kind of turned away and walked away. And Manny said he never saw his mother again, and it took him decades to forgive her for doing that. But that saved his life. They went on the kinder transport on a boat that was bound for England. And the problem is Anna was 14 years old, and she was told, you're too old, you have to get off the boat. They were only taking kids, and she was no longer considered to be a child. So she was reunited with her parents, and they were sent to Auschwitz, and they were murdered. But Manny and Siegfried made it to England and were taken in by a Christian family. And ultimately, Manny was brought to the United States by Hias and reunited with his aunt and uncle in Toms River, New Jersey, where they were chicken farmers. There were many Jewish chicken farmers back then in that part of New Jersey. But Manny, as I said, it took him decades to forgive his mother for saving his life in that way. He couldn't believe that she pushed him away. But he eventually came to terms with it, and just as his brother was dying, he was finally able to talk about his experience and start talking to schools about the Holocaust and about bullying. And then when he was 81 years old, he decided to go to Europe and with his grandkids and trace his refugee journey backwards from Poland into Germany and cross the border on World Refugee Day. And he did it to raise money for HIAS to support our programs in Chad for our Darfuri children refugees. But there's somebody who really, to me, exemplifies why we do what we do, why it's important for Jews to remember that we were refugees, and that while it's not easy to welcome the stranger or to open up to the other who represents a religion that we may not be familiar with or that we may make assumptions about, it's really important for us to do that, and others will follow our example if we do. So thank you. Shabbat Shalom.